Italy has fascinating culture, beautiful scenery, amazing history, and warm, friendly people. Nobody knows Italy better than the host of How to Tour Italy. Here's Anthony Capozzoli on TalkZone.com.
Welcome back to the How to Tour Italy show and a discussion with our guest, Mr. Paul Bennett of Context Travel. How you doing, Paul?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so very much for being a part of the show today. I appreciate that.
Not a problem. Glad to be here.
Great stuff. And I had this great introduction all planned for you, but we played a wonderful commercial about Context Travel, so I think that summed it up wonderfully. But I think to kick things off here, I will describe your walking tours through the cities that you do the walking tours in as, quite frankly, in my opinion, and I've taken quite a few of them, as the best of the best. And the academic value and the ability and the ins and outs of the docents and what you learn along the way is fantastic.
Well, thanks a lot. Yeah, it's kind of a new model for doing walking tours and understanding cities, and we're, you know, constantly honing and developing it, but I'm glad you've enjoyed them.
Yeah, definitely, and I've spent quite a bit of time throughout Italy and have done tours with other walking tour groups and even on my own, and I did take your tour, starting with the Roman Forum. We went to the Colosseum and the Palatine Hill, went to lunch with the docent, and then after that, we went to the Vatican Museums, and it was absolutely enlightening. I would say that it is something that everyone should do with their big trip overseas to Italy and, quite frankly, the other cities that you do work in.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you're talking, in that case, in Rome, but really all the cities that we operate in, you know, these are cities of incredible depth. And complexity, historical complexity, cultural complexity, and sort of, you know, from my perspective, my own personal perspective, when I go to a place like this, I want to get an expert, not just a tour guide who's reciting a script or, right, you know, learn something pat, but somebody who really understands the material or specific aspect of the material of the history and can make it come alive for me, kind of like, you know, the best college professors that you had, you know, back in college, who kind of lit that light of intellectual curiosity in you. You want to have that happen again on site, in situ, in these amazing museums and monuments of Europe.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. In fact, one of the quotes that I read on your website, and I agree completely, is that it's like going back to college for 3 hours, or the full day if they take the full day tour, and I completely agree, because it was great.
Yeah, I mean, I think it probably could be, that quote could probably be adjusted a little bit. You know, some people kind of roll their eyes at that and say, oh my God, I mean, I'm on vacation, I want to go back to school.
Yeah, right.
You know, I'm a kind of person, and I think most of our clients, and certainly our docents were, who loved college for the most part and loved that moment when you had that, you know, that aha, I get it, I see how things link together.
Certainly.
You know, for me personally, I'm not an art historian, but it was actually an art history class. I took the kind of standard two-semester art history class, and just having that story woven together so that you could see how art and, you know, aesthetics of human existence connected from one era to the next across cultures, across the Western story, was an amazing, thrilling experience. And to be able to kind of go back and do that for a short period of time, 2 or 3 hours, or for the whole day, if you're a glutton for cultural punishment, you know, to me, it's one of the most rewarding and enriching experiences.
That's great. And one thing I always wondered is, you know, what got you started? I mean, outside of the art history class that you took, I mean, what got you started or made you create Context Travel? I think the listeners would like to learn a little bit about that.
Well, my personal background is in architecture and landscape architecture. I have a master's degree actually in the classics, but I'm a journalist. And when my wife and I found ourselves in Rome back in 2001, 2002, I was working as a stringer for Architectural Record and a bunch of other architectural magazines. And I wrote an article about the gardens of Rome. And a bunch of people read it, found the article, and I'd done some lecturing on the topic, and began asking me to lead garden walks of Rome. So I was taking them to Tivoli and doing the gardens up at the Quirinale and the secret gardens at the Villa Borghese. And
sure,
pretty soon people started asking me, well, what about the rest of Rome, archaeological sites, classical history sites? What about the Vatican? Can you take us to the Vatican? And of course, I couldn't take them to the Vatican. I'm not an art historian, and sure, I couldn't do the same type of thing, not being a specialist, But Rome is an amazing city, filled with lots of academics and specialists and experts in different areas. And I began to put together a network of people. And there was an existing group of people who had come together as a network of scholars called Scala Reale. And I was a member of this organization, and I was doing garden walks for this organization. And there were a whole bunch of archaeologists and art historians. And so we teamed up with Scala Reale and eventually acquired them and started to build an incredibly robust network of people to do walking tours, walking seminars. And in the case of each walking seminar, the docent was paired with the group according to their specialty. So an art historian in the Vatican, an archaeologist in the Forum, and so on and so forth.
That's great. And so how do you find your docents? I mean, do you reach out to them most of the time? I would assume by now, because you're as popular and as successful as you are, that the docents may reach out to you. But how do you find them in most cases, and how do they go about getting on board with Context Travel?
Well, it goes both ways. Occasionally, you know, we'll have a topic area in a given city where we feel we need to recruit more docents, and we'll go out looking for them. And we look for them either by attending some of the scholarly conferences or posting notices within departments and universities that we know have strong programs in the area we're looking. We also use social media, you know, like Facebook and LinkedIn and places like this. But I would say more often, maybe 60 or 70% of the time, the docents find us. Suddenly finding themselves in one of these cities, either on a research project or a teaching assignment.
Mm-hmm.
And they have colleagues who are in our network or know of our network, and they reach out to us and say, hey, I'm in Florence for the next 5 years on a Medici project grant for the National Endowment of the Humanities, and you know, I know a lot about this specific topic, and I'd love to do some lecturing in that area. And then we have a whole recruiting and training process that we put those docents through to make sure that, you know, not only are they knowledgeable and credentialed in their area, but that they possess you know, teaching ability and passion to make it come alive. So I don't know about your experience, you know, in college and on the university level, but there are lots of smart people in the university system and in academia, not all of whom are gifted instructors. And for what we do, we need people who are absolutely gifted.
No, I agree. In fact, and that's the thing about your docents. They're not just, as you mentioned, tour guides per se. I mean, they are literally experts holding at least a master's, most often a PhD in their particular discipline. So they can go as deep and as wide as the people in the group need them to go, correct?
Exactly. And that's where the small group format comes into play, because you may have on a given tour, you know, people of varying backgrounds, varying knowledge, and also varying learning habits. You know, some people like to learn by just listening. Some people need to learn by getting involved and asking questions. So, you know, of all these backgrounds and different needs in a group, and by keeping the group small, no more than six people, that allows the docent to either go in depth on a certain topic or a certain person in the group, or to step back and do more of an overview, big picture outline of the topic for somebody who's more of a neophyte or is coming to this subject area for the first time.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's the great thing about your walking tours. And when I was on the tour, that's exactly what the docent did for us. Certain people in the group had deeper questions, and they would take time to answer those. And they did really an excellent job of the broad brushstrokes with lots of great color and history about what exactly was going on at the Palatine Hill at the time, about the Forum, and specifically the Colosseum. And it really came to life in the Vatican Museums. It was wonderful, and I'd been there quite a few times, but this visit with Context Travel really, in my opinion, was my favorite visit.
Fantastic.
One of the things, too, let's talk a little bit about some of the tours that you do offer, and we can expand even outside of Italy if you'd like. That's fine. I mean, I know that you do tours here in the U.S. and New York and some other countries throughout Europe. So let's talk a little bit about some of your favorite tours that your organization offers.
Well, you know, in Italy, yeah, there's actually no end to my favorite walks. But recently, I was in Florence, and I went on our Medici portrait of a family walk. We used to call it Medici Power and Imagination after the really good scholarly analysis of that family by the same name. But this is, to me, this is the perfect context walk. First of all, it takes you to some sites that are perhaps lesser known to people. It goes to San Marco and then to the Medici Palace, Medici Riccardi Palace, then San Lorenzo, and then around the back of San Lorenzo to the new sacristy by Michelangelo, or with the decoration by Michelangelo.
Sure.
It's a long walk. It's 3.5 hours. And in fact, it's not even enough time to get everything in. But because of the way it's laid out, you know, it takes you through a kind of chronological lesson in the first Medici family, you know, the primary family from Cosimo, the first all the way down through Lorenzo de' Medici, and then kind of flashes forward to the Dukes in the 16th century and Michelangelo. And you learn a lot about the family's power base, where it came from, their dicey relationship with the Republic of Florence, how that political situation resulted in the fine architecture and art that you're seeing. And of course, the whole thing, it's usually led by an art historian, the whole thing is amply illustrated by some of the finest artworks in the world, whether it's something very well known like the Fra Angelico frescoes at San Marco, or, you know, something that's much more of a surprise for most people, like the Benozzo Gozzoli chapel inside the Medici Palace, which is something that's not, you have to make an advance reservation in order to go, so that the walk is also has that attribute of being taking you someplace that's not completely accessible and just walking in off the street. So it has surprise, it has depth. There's always a lot of questions. Clients, the people who participate in this walk are always fascinated by the Medici and want to probe this relationship between power and art, and there's just no end to the discussion that can take place. So that's one of my favorite walks across all of our cities, for sure.
Oh, that's great. I spent quite a bit of time this past summer October this summer. I'm thinking ahead because I'm so tired of the cold here in Chicago. I spent quite a bit of time in Florence, and you're right, there, it is just an absolutely beautiful city, but there is so much to see around every corner, in every room of every museum, chapel, church, that without an experienced guide, or at least a well-read guidebook, which I think is only the, you know, kind of barely scratching the surface on what you need to have an effective or a fun time on these tours, I think a guide is exactly the way to go, because there is so much to see and do, and it's almost this art, history, and architectural overload. So it's nice to have someone kind of get through that with you and for you and describe what's important and paint the picture for you, which I think is wonderful.
Yeah, the other challenge, on some level, Florence might be one of the most challenging cities in Italy because of tourism itself. It's arguably the most touristed city in Italy, at least in terms of volumes of tourists all mashed into one area. And whether it's, you know, going on one of our walks or any kind of a guided tour, or whether it's using, you know, great audio tour or a guidebook, however it is that you're approaching the city, the tool that you choose has to have the right strategy, okay? And the strategy in Florence is somehow weaving your way through the crowds and getting off the beaten path. I mean, that, more than anywhere, is a critical element visiting Florence. Getting away from the crowds into one of the hidden side streets, one of the hidden chapels or museums or churches, and there are tons of them in Florence where very few people go, that are filled with important artistic masterpieces. And navigating that, negotiating that is absolutely critical, and it's one of the things we think about when we're designing walks in Florence, is how can we approach the city so that we minimize the clamor that you encounter when you go into places like the Uffizi.
Sure. That's the thing. I'm always amazed. I go back to Italy every year for quite some time, and I always walk up to the people in line at the Uffizi or the Academia who didn't, you know, at least pre-reserve a ticket, and they wait there for hours and hours and hours. And I walk up and ask them every single time, why didn't you just make a reservation and enjoyed your time here and then walked up when you were supposed to go into the museum? And the answer is always exactly the same. We didn't know that we had to. I'm amazed because every single blog, every single website, every single guidebook recommends highly to make a reservation or book a tour. So that's always something that I'm flabbergasted by. And I think that, would you agree with me that most people make that mistake?
Yeah, it's and that, to me, that mistake is emblematic of one of the problems in travel today, which is an information problem. You know, where, how are those people planning their visits to Florence, and or who's planning them, those visits for them, and what kind of information does that person possess? Because you're right, that information's out there in tons of it, but you know, not everybody's taking advantage of it, not everybody's investing in their travel in terms of time to make the right decision. But yeah, I'm always amazed by it.
It's, you know, not to sidetrack from our discussion about context, but I was in Siena this 2 summers ago during the polio, and the polio is literally starting in 30 minutes, and I got lucky enough to get a balcony seat, which, you know, you have to book in advance, and they cost quite a bit of money. But I recommend actually enjoying the polio from the center of the Campo. I think it's a much better cultural experience. But the point is, I was talking to some people that happened to be in the bar that I was at for to watch the polio, and he asked me what was going on here. And I'm like, well, this is the polio, the horse race, as far as Italy is concerned, and it's been going on for centuries. He had no idea what I was talking about. And I'm like, well, and you decided to come to Siena today, of all days, for the polio, probably the single busiest, or at least second busiest day in Siena, because there are two runnings of the polio. But I was amazed that he had no idea what was going on. And I asked him where he had come from, and he had come from Rome. And so I started asking, you know, did you go to the Vatican? Did you see St. Peter's? No, we didn't see any of that stuff. I said, and I'm like, well, what did you see there? Well, we had lunch, and then we saw some fountains, and then we got in the car, or the bus, rather, and drove up here with the tour group. You missed it, I think.
Right.
You know? So that's one of those things. I mean, that's why I think context travel and walking tours are so critical, because they take the time to show you what's important, show you the right things at the right time, and lead the way around. I mean, and that's part of the beauty of it, because a lot of people are concerned or nervous. And as you know, the streets throughout Italy and Rome, Florence, aren't always the easiest to navigate. So going with an expert, I think, is the way to go.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. And I'm always curious to know, I mean, you spend some of your time here in the States, and then I think in Paris and in Rome as well.
Yep.
Do you have a favorite restaurant recommendation or two you can give some of the listeners for Rome?
Sure. Yeah, well, Rome is still my favorite city in the entire world, and we've expanded context. I've traveled a lot as a journalist, and of course now I spend a lot of time in Istanbul and London and New York, where context has branches, but still Rome is my favorite. In terms of restaurants, now I have three little kids, so
right,
we don't do a lot of restaurant going. We do, however, ritually go out for pizza at least once a week.
Sure.
When we're in Rome. And we spend about 4 months a year in Rome. And my kids love pizza and are quite connoisseurs of it. And, of course, Rome is one of the best pizza traditions in Italy. There are a bunch of great pizzerias. One of our favorites, and partly because it's close to where we have an apartment, is Monte Carlo, which is right near the Campo di Fiori,
sure.
Piazza Navona area. Very well-known, traditional place. A lot of kids' groups go there. But if you go a little bit later, like around 8 o'clock, and when the ovens are hot, they simply make one of the best pizzas around.
That's wonderful.
I also like the Trattoria Dittirambo, which is also near the Campo di Fiori. It's relatively well known. They do a great job with seasonal dishes. So, for example, in April, you go there and they're serving vignarola and other, you know, fava bean and pea-based meals. Lots of vegetarian dishes. Lots of really kind of clean, fresh cooking. Almost health food, but, you know, in a very much a traditional Roman context. I really like Dittirambo. And then, you know, it kind of makes it sound like I never go away from the Campo di Fiore. Also near the Campo di Fiore is a great enoteca that I love to go to, which is called Il Goccetto. But it doesn't say it on the inside. It just says Vino e Olio on the outside. But it's right near Ponte Mazzini, but on the Centro Storico side of the river. And that is a really great enoteca, so wine bar, wonderful meats and cheeses, and a great selection of wine, always a bunch of great selections of wine by the glass. Very few visitors go in there because it seems some of them too authentic, you know, but that's really great. The people there are friendly, they know their wine, and it's actually one of the places I always have evening meetings with docents and clients and things.
Well, thank you so very much for the tips, not only on where to find the best in Rome to eat, but about Context Travel. You were a wonderful guest. And as we wrap up, I just wanted you to maybe tell people how to find you and how far in advance they should book a tour.
Sure. Well, we can. You can find us most easily on the Internet at www.contexttravel.com. You can also call us. We have an office in Philadelphia in the United States. And the number for that is 1-800-691-6036. And people, you know, book our walks, you know, at varying degrees. And we do have people who call last minute, and we do have walks that are running every day with spaces that are available. And you know, you get less of a choice at that point, but
right.
Usually you can do it. A lot of people contact us a month or two out. And book walks then. People who want to do something specialized, a customized private tour on some topic, I urge them to reach out 3 and 4 months in advance, if not even more than that, especially if the request requires some kind of special appointment.
Sure.
For example, getting into the Vatican after hours. Those requests have to be made 6 to 8 months in advance. But can be done, and we do them all the time.
Well, thank you very, very much, Paul. You're a wonderful guest. And everyone out there, visit Context Travel for the best walking tours you can find, not only in Italy, but in other great cities throughout Europe and the United States. Have a great day, Paul.
Thank you so much, Anthony.
Take care, buddy. Bye-bye. It's time to take a short break, and stay tuned after this. We'll be right back with our food and wine segment and a great guest, Chris Carriero.
If you love travel, imagine visiting one of the world's greatest cities and exploring it as very few ever have. Only Context Travel makes it possible. Context Travel offers in-depth walking seminars for intellectually curious travelers like you. It's your chance to experience a city as a cultural experience unlike any traditional tour. Context Travel is a network of architects, historians, and art historians. They feature small groups of 6 or less, led by PhD-level scholars, with walks lasting from 3 hours to a full day. You can book a Context tour in 7 great cities: New York, Paris, London, Rome, Florence, Venice, Naples, or Istanbul. Context Travel offers concierge services, art and archaeology walks, cuisine walks, shopping walks, and more. Visit us online at contexttravel.com. That's contexttravel.com. That's contexttravel.com.